Today is Friday, September 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe has passed away at the age of 95. We take a look back at his life.
Because Robert Mugabe was right at first, but somehow he went wrong.
Also ahead, the Bahamas continue to rebuild after Hurricane Dorian unleashed its devastation. And Hong Kong braces for more protests even after a key protest demand is met. Those stories and more are next. Robert Mugabe, who ruled the southern African nation of Zimbabwe for 37 years following the end of white minority rule in 1980, has died. He was 95 years old. Some hail him as a liberation hero who stood by his principles, but others say he rigged elections, destroyed the economy of what was once Africa's breadbasket, and terrorized his people for decades. In South Africa, Marvin Majikara, a Zimbabwean national, had this reaction.
I think every person in life has two sides of life, of their story. There's the good and the bad. So I think it's up to the people of the world to choose which part of Mugabe they want to remember, you know. But to me as a Zimbabwean, I think there are certain parts of the things that he did for us as Zimbabweans, which is like your education and a lot of good things, but there's also the bad side of things that he did. But we're all human beings, we have the good and the bad. So it's up to the world to decide how they want to remember him.
Gong Shuang, spokesperson for the Chinese Foreign Ministry, called Mugabe a prominent leader and politician of the National Liberation Movement of Zimbabwe. That Mugabe opposed foreign interference and actively promoted China's friendly relations and cooperation with Zimbabwe and Africa. Gong also said Beijing mourns and expressed sincere condolences to the Zimbabwean government, people, and Mugabe's family. British former Labour Party minister and anti-apartheid campaigner Lord Peter Hain outlined what he thought was tragic about Mugabe.
And he is a case study in how somebody who can come to power amidst great hope and preaching noble ideals ends up betraying all those ideals of the freedom struggle and consigning his country to economic bankruptcy, to murdering and intimidating and exerting, taking violence against his opponent. So Mugabe ended up so desperate to cling to power and became increasingly corrupt and venal and surrounding himself with a corrupt military security and political elite that he just distanced himself completely from where he'd once been, to the tragedy of his own reputation and particularly to the misery of his own people.
And VOA's Anita Powell reports from Harare on Mugabe's life and legacy.
Robert Mugabe, Zimbabwe's first president, leaves behind a complicated legacy after 37 years of increasingly autocratic rule. In his younger years, he led the guerrilla movement that resulted in Zimbabwe's independence. At the time, he was hailed as a liberation hero, both inside and outside the former British colony once known as Rhodesia. Early on, he urged Zimbabweans to reconcile after the civil war that raged during the final colonial years. He also initially expanded the country's education and health systems, making them among the best regarded in Africa. But as time went on, Mugabe grew intolerant of dissent and faced increasing allegations of human rights abuses, repression, and election rigging. Farm output plunged after land reforms transferred white-owned commercial farms to black Zimbabweans, some of whom lacked the experience and funding to make the farms productive. For many Zimbabweans, cash, jobs, and fairly priced commercial goods remain impossible to get. And for that, many blame Mugabe. Speaking to VOA in 2018, Mugabe defended his years in power.
And I have, during that time, during all this time, cried for return, our return to constitutionality, our return to legality, our return to freedom for our people, an environment in which our people would be free.
28-year-old clerk Pedzai Chakwenya said he had mixed feelings about the man who ruled Zimbabwe for most of his life.
Because Robert Mugabe was right at first, but somehow he went wrong.
As he aged into his 90s, Mugabe grew frail and his wife, unpopular with the public, positioned herself to eventually take power. The military prevented that by taking control of state institutions and forcing Mugabe to resign in November 2017. He was replaced by his longtime deputy, Emmerson Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa, notably, declined to prosecute Mugabe.
Neo, but not evil, is the founding father of the nation of Zimbabwe. He is our founding father of free Zimbabwe.
Mugabe will be buried at Harare's Heroes Acre Cemetery, his final resting place overlooking a country that, for decades, was inseparable from the man at the top. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
UN and international agencies are scaling up relief efforts as more areas in hurricane-battered islands of the Bahamas become accessible. Lisa Schlein reports the World Health Organization has sent three emergency medical teams to cope with growing health needs spawned by recent onslaughts of Hurricane Dorian. Hurricane Dorian left parts of the Bahamas underwater and in total ruin. First responders and disaster relief organizations mobilized to deliver aid and assist in search and rescue operations in the Caribbean nation, where at least 30 deaths have been recorded. Forensic teams from the Bahamas Health Ministry found five bodies during the search for survivors, removing the dead from under tons of rubble from collapsed houses. Hubert Alexander Minnis, the Bahamian prime minister, says slow progress is being made.
Much of Grand Bahama was previously underwater, but Grand Bahama is now cleared. Some homes, businesses, and other buildings and infrastructure were badly damaged.
Hurricane Dorian, one of the most powerful storms recorded, was the strongest ever to hit the Bahamas. It lingered for 2 days atop the island nation. Buildings flattened, vehicles were tossed, highways ripped apart. Minister of National Security for the Bahamas, Marvin Dames, says now the process of seeing how badly they've been hit is underway.
Now that the storm has passed, we're beginning to carry out our damage assessments and to see exactly, logistically, how we're looking.
From the ground, in another badly hit area of the Abaco Islands, entire neighborhoods have been torn to pieces. A sign that a humanitarian crisis is looming, says Major Clarence Ingram, divisional commander of the Salvation Army in the Bahamas. The Salvation Army, much like the Red Cross, brings immediate relief like food, water, and medicine.
The people just can't wait. When you've lost everything, you need food, you just can't sit around and wait for it. We will try to hire some local people to help with the relief effort because it puts money in their pocket, helps them to continue to survive and not only to have a little bit of food, but to be able to get some things together to begin to put their lives back together.
While some residents were able to go back to what was left of their homes, many, like this survivor, left the devastated area and headed to Freeport in search of food, water, and accommodation.
Slept in the ceiling for 2 days. Got 8 feet of water in my house. And right now I'm headed into the city of Freeport for refuge. So keep us in prayer, we Bahamas strong.
Brianne May Cooper, another 43-year-old hurricane survivor, called Dorian indescribable.
There's no words to describe the experience. I know from my area that I live in, Gambier Point, basically, everybody lost everything.
Thursday in New York, a United Nations spokeswoman said the World Food Program is organizing an airlift of things like generators and satellite equipment, plus 8 tons of ready-to-eat meals to help the tens of thousands now in need. Prime Minister Minnis announced that the United States was also sending aid.
This afternoon, I spoke with President Donald Trump, who has expressed the support of and pledged the assistance of the United States of America for the Bahamas in our time of need.
The United States Coast Guard so far has rescued more than 100 people and several pets. We now have the Lisa Schlein report, and Lisa Schlein reporting for us from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Two emergency medical teams arrived in the Bahamas on Friday, and a third is expected on Saturday. While life-saving search and rescue operations are ongoing, the World Health Organization is focusing on clinical care to save the lives of hurricane survivors. The manager of WHO's Emergency Medical Teams Initiative, Ian Norton, says the hospital in the Grand Bahama city of Freeport has been flooded with sewage-contaminated water and needs to be temporarily replaced with a field hospital. He says other clinics on the islands have been destroyed or damaged and will have to be replaced. Although Norton expects the current death toll of 30 to rise, he says he does not expect to see huge numbers of injured people.
We see, unfortunately, a lot of people drown and losing their lives or surviving, but we don't see those who are injured surviving, so therefore we don't see large numbers afterwards. What we do see is needs related to background health, particularly in the Bahamas. They have 13% diabetes. We also see a lot of renal disease in Pacific and Caribbean countries, and those patients need our special attention.
Another concern, says Norton, is an expected outbreak of vector-borne and mosquito-borne diseases as the stagnant floodwaters start to get repopulated by mosquitoes. As the death toll rises, he tells VOA, dead body management will become more important. Norton says special protocols and procedures on handling the dead bodies will have to be followed.
Does not cause outbreaks of disease. Dead bodies do not cause disease. There are respectful and culturally appropriate ways of managing, and we need to focus on that, not start spreading rumors that, you know, piles of bodies will cause disease to the population that's left. It doesn't happen.
Before the hurricane struck, the WHO-linked Pan American Health Organization has sent experts in water and sanitation and health services to the islands, experts in logistics, disease surveillance, coordination, and other areas of need also are on the ground to help with the relief effort. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Among other top stories in the world, China has pledged to help fund a $169 billion infrastructure renewal drive in the Philippines, an apparent bid for friendship as Filipinos question whether officials in Beijing are trying to squelch their maritime sovereignty claims. Hope, peace, and reconciliation were the three main pillars of Pope Francis's message to lawmakers and youth during his first papal visit to Mozambique. South Africa has begun assessing the toll of the week's anti-immigrant violence, which, according to authorities, has claimed 10 lives, injured scores more, incited fear, hobbled business activity, and strained relations with other African countries. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our mobile app. This is VOA News.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the biggest threat to President Yoweri Museveni's re-election in 2021 may be a 37-year-old musician. The future of Uganda on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. British opposition parties discussed today how to respond to Boris Johnson's bid to call a snap election after the Prime Minister said he would rather die than ditch and delay a planned 31 October departure date from the European Union. Those discussions are taking place after London's High Court rejected a legal challenge against Johnson's suspension of Parliament before Brexit. Now, make sense of this as we head into the weekend. Henry Ridgewell joins us on the phone from London. Henry, can you give us a quick update on where things stand with members of Parliament trying to prevent Boris Johnson from crashing out of the EU?
Yes, the piece of legislation that MPs in the House of Commons passed on Wednesday is in the House of Lords today. It has been Thursday and Friday, and it's expected to be passed by the House of Lords, that's the upper chamber in Britain, handed back to the House of Commons, where it should be a formality for it then to go to the government, and the theory being any piece of legislation that passes both houses of Parliament is then automatically signed by the Queen onto the statute book. So that's where we are as of now. There are one or two complications that could get in the way.
What are they?
There is a possibility that Boris Johnson could refuse to take that piece of legislation and in theory take it to the Queen to be signed onto the statute book. There is that he could refuse to ask for it to be given royal assent. That would precipitate a huge constitutional crisis in this country, so that would be a very serious step to take. But he is so ardently against this piece of legislation, it's possible. But at the moment, we expect this piece of legislation blocking no deal to go onto the statute book in the coming days.
What can you tell us about these legal challenges trying to prevent Boris Johnson from suspending or proroguing Parliament?
Yes, that prorogation or suspension of Parliament is due to take effect at some point next week. That was why it was such a rush to get this piece of legislation blocking no deal through. There were three court cases launched against that prorogation. Two of them have returned initial verdicts, both ruling that the suspension was legal, essentially because the judges ruled that it is not the place of the judiciary to step in and interfere in the business of government. Having said that, two of those two cases that have ruled, they are being appealed. They're going to higher courts, one in Edinburgh in Scotland, the other in London, which will be fast-tracked into the Supreme Court in both locations, and we should get a verdict on those in the coming days. There is a third court case taking place in Northern Ireland, in Belfast, actually brought by the parents of a victim of the Troubles in Northern Ireland back 20 or so years ago, who argue that the no-deal Brexit would in fact breach the terms of the Good Friday Agreement, which brought peace to Northern Ireland, of which, of course, Britain was a signatory. That one has not returned a verdict yet. I think it's due later today or possibly early next week. It will be very interesting to see what the judges there in Ireland and Northern Ireland make of that, because, of course, that is one of the key stumbling blocks to the Brexit deal, is what will happen with the Northern Irish Republic of Ireland border.
Henry Ridgewell is in London. Thank you so much for your time today.
Great to be with you, Steve.
中国政府坚定不移地维护
Chinese Premier Li Keqiang told a news conference with visiting German Chancellor Angela Merkel today that the Chinese government unswervingly safeguards one country, two systems, and Hong Kong people govern Hong Kong people. He continued by saying that Beijing supports the Special Administrative Region's government to end the violence and chaos in accordance with the law, to return order, which is to safeguard Hong Kong's long-term prosperity and stability. He also asserted that the world needs to believe that the Chinese people have the ability and wisdom to handle their own matters as well. Germany's chancellor raised Hong Kong with Premier Li on Friday, saying a peaceful solution is needed. An extradition bill, which would have allowed people in the former British colony to be sent to the mainland China for trial in courts controlled by the Communist Party, triggered mass protests that have since widened into a backlash against the Hong Kong government and its political masters in Beijing. Hong Kong is bracing for more demonstrations this weekend. Hong Kong protesters besieged a police station and a subway stop on Friday in continuing defiance despite the government's promise to kill a proposed law that sparked months of demonstrations in the semi-autonomous Chinese city. Earlier, I spoke with Hong Kong-based journalist Justin Solomon for more information. Chief Executive Carrie Lam has withdrawn the extradition bill formally. But it appears that, according to some protesters, that's too little too late, with more protests slated to begin this weekend. What exactly is looking to be the weekend forecast for the protests?
Well, you're absolutely right. Protesters are saying, you know, it's 2 months too late. They've been very vocal about that. And in a way, it shows that this movement has grown far beyond just the extradition bill. Protests are planned all weekend, yet again in Hong Kong, including a gathering tonight at a MTR station to protest actions police took a few weeks back. On Saturday, we're expecting protesters to attempt what they're calling another stress test on the airport, potentially causing havoc on one of the world's busiest airports once again. And on Sunday, the U.S. consulate has warned they're expecting a rally in front of their building. That rally, of course, to ask the United States for help in the current situation.
Beijing has been very adamant for foreign powers to stay out of the situation in Hong Kong. What do the protesters really expect to happen with this rally in front of the U.S. embassy?
Well, the protesters really still think and want the United States to step forward and say, yes, we've recognized, we've given Hong Kong this special recognition for years, but that recognition should be taken away. And that's what they're asking for. They're saying Hong Kong doesn't deserve this special recognition anymore because it's being controlled by Beijing.
If we take a look at the protests that are planned for the airport, previously, the protests disrupted air traffic there. There was a lot of clashes with authorities there. Does that look like it may repeat? And if so, is it going to be on the scale of some of the more violent clashes we've seen in Hong Kong?
You know, it's unlikely. And that's because of all of the added security measures at the airport and around the airport. Protesters just can't get to the actual airport. So what they're trying to do, and what they tried last weekend and somewhat successfully for a period of time, is block the roads. I think this weekend will be a real tell on where this movement is going. You know, it comes days after Carrie Lam came out with her concession. So we'll see this weekend just how many people take to the streets, just how violent these protests become, and just how big they are and how many spots and pockets around Hong Kong they pop up in. And I think on Monday we'll be able to look at this weekend and have a good idea as to where the movement is going.
Justin Solomon is a journalist based in Hong Kong. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Leaders of several South American nations that share the Amazon are gathered Friday in Colombia to boost protection for the world's largest rainforest. Colombian President Iván Duque convoked the summit to enhance cooperation that began with the 1978 signing of a treaty by eight Amazon nations, but which has stalled even as threats from climate change and unchecked development have increased. U.S. employers added a modest 130,000 jobs in August. AP correspondent Shelley Adler has this report.
I think overall the tone of this tells us that hiring in the U.S. is slowing, not stopping.
Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com.
That helps to reverse the fears of a recession in the near term. Those have been percolating since last December.
As for weakness in the report,
we see that the private sector number of jobs added actually fell below 100,000. The total was lifted by the addition of 34,000 government jobs as hiring is gearing up for the census. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell and others have said that they want to put some so-called insurance in place to make sure this economic expansion does keep going.
Shelley Adler, Washington.
And with that, that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Dan Brown, engineer, Andreas Regis, and managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, thank you so much for listening. You'll find in-depth coverage of world events and news at voanews.com. And don't forget, with our mobile application, you can download our stories and take them with you on your tablet, your phone, or other mobile device. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a fantastic weekend.